If you have wrestled with what is available in the UFO world for 10 years as I have, that is a significantly high percentage of the cases where personal contacts with the people from the so-called UFOs were made. These were with especially beautiful Aryan types, blonde and blue-eyed, and that they either spoke fluent German or another language with a German accent. For insiders, I would refer to the Adamski case of 1952. The Cedric Gallingham case of 1954 and the Howard Menger case of 1956. It is further said that color photographs taken by a night guard in West Germany in the 70s exist of a landed and restarted flying disc that had both a Knight's Cross and a swastika on its hull. The flying machines just mentioned are well documented on photographs and films. There is the 60 Minutes documentary UFO, Secrets of the Third Reich. The American Vladimir Terzisky gave a three-hour speech at the September 1991 UFO conference in Phoenix, Arizona, where he showed slides of German saucers, construction plans and subterranean German bases. Also of interest are the book by the Italian Air Force commander Renato Vesco and the book by Rudolf Luser Die Deutschen Waffen und Geheimwaffen des Witten Weltkrieges an die Erweiterung und Wicklung, the German arms and secret weapons of the Second World War and their development, J.F. Lehmann's Verlag, Munich 1971. 110. Do you see now why the subject of UFOs is treated as nonsense by the media, especially in Germany? Upon this German background, it becomes evident that the news and media world controlled by the Illuminati through the Anglo-American Zionist lobby shirks no costs to keep the German citizens from research in this area. The question arises from whether Thule and Viril secret societies got their knowledge about the construction of these flying machines. Also their knowledge of gene technology, in which area the Germans were also way ahead of other countries. According to Herbert G. Dossi and other researchers, they had, beside the construction plans, the Viril Gesellschaft had received through telepathic contact with extraterrestrials, a non-terrestrial saucer that had crashed in the Black Forest in 1936 and whose undamaged drive had proved a great help to the Germans. But there is practically no proof of that, and no living eyewitnesses are known. But these exist in America, and in large numbers. For around the same time, the Americans recorded quite a number of crashes that could not be kept entirely secret. More of that later. Back to the political arena. Apart from the fact that IG Farben supported Hitler, their cartel partner Standard Oil, Rockefeller, fanned the flames against the Nazis. The Ford Motor Company, for instance, helped to build up the American army while at the same time producing in Germany military vehicles for the Nazis. Ford and Opel, subsidiary of General Motors that is controlled by J.P. Morgan, were the two largest producers of tanks in Hitler's Germany. Whatever the outcome of the war, these multinational companies had already made their cuts. Many enterprises followed this principle during the Second World War. Why is there nothing about all this in schoolbooks or encyclopedias? Especially in Germany, where the freedom of the press is apparently honored and the truth is taught? One of the reasons is that the Rockefeller Foundation spent $139,000 in 1946 to present an official history of the Second World War, which covered up the whole story of the U.S. bankers building up the Nazi regime, as well as the occult and mystical background of the Nazis. One of the main sponsors was Rockefeller's own Standard Oil Corporation, Germany. Upon this German background, it becomes evident that the news and media world controlled by the Illuminati through the Anglo-American Zionist lobby shirks no costs to keep the German citizens from research in this area. The question arises from whether Thule and Viril secret societies got their knowledge about the construction of these flying machines. Also their knowledge of gene technology, in which area the Germans were also way ahead of other countries. According to Herbert G. Dossi and other researchers, they had, beside the construction plans the Viril Gesellschaft had received through telepathic contact with extraterrestrials, a non-terrestrial saucer that had crashed in the Black Forest in 1936 and whose undamaged drive had proved a great help to the Germans. But there is practically no proof of that, and no living eyewitnesses are known. But these exist in America, and in large numbers. For around the same time, the Americans recorded quite a number of crashes that could not be kept entirely secret. More of that later. Back to the political arena. Apart from the fact that IG Farben supported Hitler, their cartel partner Standard Oil, Rockefeller, fanned the flames against the Nazis. The Ford Motor Company, for instance, helped to build up the American army while at the same time producing in Germany military vehicles for the Nazis. Ford and Opel, subsidiary of General Motors that is controlled by J.P. Morgan, were the two largest producers of tanks in Hitler's Germany. Whatever the outcome of the war, these multinational companies had already made their cuts. Many enterprises followed this principle during the Second World War. Why is there nothing about all this in schoolbooks or encyclopedias? Especially in Germany, where the freedom of the press is apparently honored and the truth is taught? One of the reasons is that the Rockefeller Foundation spent $139,000 in 1946 to present an official history of the Second World War, which covered up the whole story of the U.S. bankers building up the Nazi regime, as well as the occult and mystical background of the Nazis. One of the main sponsors was Standard Oil Corporation. Chapter 34: The Second World War. Although hundreds of books have been written about the tragedy that was the Second World War, very few people know anything about what was really behind this costliest of all wars. The history of war as it is told in countless history books in Germany, England, the US and Japan has only little in common with the actual causes and objectives of that war. What is recounted is certainly correct, but half the truth has been omitted. The picture painters of the controlled mass media have also done a masterful job of pulling the wool over the eyes of those whom they are supposedly dedicated to inform and educate. These peddlers of deception have been guilty of reducing the minds of the general public to what has rightly been described as a state of impotent confusion regarding World War II. Des Griffin, Descent into Slavery? Slowly but surely the truth comes out now, and a clearer picture of what really occurred is emerging. What we know of the war are the historical dates. Who, when, where, with whom did what? But those who actually pulled the strings are never mentioned. After the Hitler-Stalin Pact, Poland was to be split up, and Hitler proceeded to bring this about on September 1, 1939. According to the conditions of the treaty signed 20 years previously, pro-Illuminati, England and France were obliged to enter the fight on Poland's side. After the Damokrieg, Twilight War, Chamberlain, who was called a coward, was replaced by the former Zionist Freemason Churchill. He was a better collaborator and, 111, he soon ordered the air strike on Germany. Since the Germans never expected England to attack, they were not prepared. Several events show that Germany did not want a war with England. In an address in 1933, Hitler said that in its fullest unfoldment, communism would also contain the British Empire. In that case, Hitler added, he would help to defend the British if he was called. So, on May 10, 1940, German troops did allow the English to evacuate 335,000 soldiers from the beach at Dunkirk. And with his flight to England, Rudolf Hess had tried to unite the two strongest northern nations. But Winston Churchill was a good friend of Bernard Baruch, who had helped Woodrow Wilson and Roosevelt to their presidencies. It was Baruch who convinced Churchill to support the foundation of the State of Israel. In May 1939, Churchill ordered Colonial Minister Lloyd to withdraw the English troops from Palestine and to equip and organize the Jews for their own defense. Chapter 35: What happened in America? Most Americans did not want to get involved in another war, but the Illuminati had differing views. The 32nd President of the U.S., the hidden Jew Franklin Delano Roosevelt, descended from the famous Sephardim Jewish Delano family and the German Jewish family Rosenfeld, was a grandmaster of the Freemasons, member of the CFR and the Committee of 300. One of his closer allies was Bernard Baruch, and for at least 8 years he was closely linked with Colonel House. As one can see, the Illuminati had their man already in place, and this man thanked them by passing an unconstitutional law, namely that before the end of April 1933 all privately owned gold had to be handed in at the bank, failure to do so resulting in a fine of $10,000 or 10 years imprisonment or both. Then gold was valued at $20.67 per ounce. After most gold had been collected, the gold price rose to $35 per ounce. The insiders had their gold in foreign banks and later sold it at the higher price, naturally. By giving the Japanese on November 26, 1941 an ultimatum by asking them to withdraw all their troops from Indochina and Manchuria, President Roosevelt provoked them to war. This is a historical fact, but a well-kept secret. Roosevelt's ultimatum was deliberately kept from Congress until after the attack on Pearl Harbor. All agreed the Japanese had no other option than war. The Japanese themselves did all they could to avoid a war with the U.S. The Japanese Prime Minister, Prince Ken Oh, repeatedly asked to come to Washington or Honolulu to meet with Roosevelt and to try to find an alternative. Later he even prepared to meet the demands by the U.S., just to avoid going to war, but several times Roosevelt refused to speak with him, since the war with Japan had been long since planned, as was the war with Germany. At the same time Roosevelt told the American people, "While I am talking to you mothers and fathers, I give you one more assurance. I have said this before, and I shall say it again and again and again, your boys are not going to be sent into any foreign wars." One is speechless in front of such a blatant deception of the people. The American military knew from several sources that the Japanese would attack Pearl Harbor first. The U.S. ambassador in Tokyo, Joseph Grew, wrote in a letter to Roosevelt on January 27, 1941, that in the case of war between Japan and the U.S., Pearl Harbor would be the first target. In August, Congress member Daiso given to Roosevelt not only the same information, but also the strategic plan of attack with a map. He was forced to silence. 112. Further, the American Secret Service had succeeded in 1941 to decipher the diplomatic as well as the military codes of the Japanese. Roosevelt and his advisors knew the date, the hour and the target in advance. Albie Leck, one of the two survivors of the Philadelphia experiment, told me that he had also been stationed in Pearl Harbor during that time, but 1 week before the attack he, together with his brother, was pulled out, because they were meant to work with Nikola Tesla on the Philadelphia experiment. They were told at that time that they were taken out because of the impending attack, that they were too valuable to die there. Pearl Harbor was told only 2 hours ahead and therefore was ill-prepared. It succumbed pitifully. That was exactly what Roosevelt wanted, for now he could call the Japanese treacherous swine, and the U.S. had to retaliate. To those who still don't believe that more is needed to become president or chancellor than just being a good politician, the following example will hopefully serve as an eye-opener. It concerns the later president of the U.S., Dwight D. Eisenhower. To guarantee the success of this infamous intrigue, the Illuminati needed one or their devoted vassals to be supreme commander of all the Allied forces in Europe. The person selected for the job was Lieutenant Colonel Dwight D. Eisenhower. His career in the army is not just interesting, it is a fascinating study of what can happen to an ordinary army soldier if he had the right people behind him. For Eisenhower, too, was a friend of Bernard Baruch. Well as the military codes of the Japanese. Roosevelt and his advisors knew the date, the hour and the target in advance. Albie Leck, one of the two survivors of the Philadelphia experiment, told me that he had also been stationed in Pearl Harbor during that time, but 1 week before the attack he, together with his brother, was pulled out, because they were meant to work with Nikola Tesla on the Philadelphia experiment. They were told at that time that they were taken out because of the impending attack, that they were too valuable to diver. Pearl Harbor was told only 2 hours ahead and therefore was ill-prepared. It succumbed pitifully. That was exactly what Roosevelt wanted, for now he could call the Japanese treacherous swine, and the U.S. had to retaliate. To those who still don't believe that more is needed to become president or chancellor than just being a good politician, the following example will hopefully serve as an eye-opener. It concerns the later president of the U.S., Dwight D. Eisenhower. To guarantee the success of this infamous intrigue, the Illuminati needed one or their devoted vassals to be supreme commander of all the Allied forces in Europe. The person selected for the job was Lieutenant Colonel Dwight D. Eisenhower. His career in the army is not just interesting, it is a fascinating study of what can happen to an ordinary army soldier if he had the right people behind him. For Eisenhower, too, was a friend of Bernard Baruch. Chapter 36: Germany wants to surrender. We have to thank the son-in-law of President Roosevelt, Colonel Curtis B. Doyle, that the story of Commander George Earle became known. Earle was a former governor of Pennsylvania, U.S. ambassador to Austria, 1935-39, and Bulgaria, 1940-42. Later he was Roosevelt's personal military attaché in Istanbul when in the spring of 1943 the head of the German Secret Service, Admiral Wilhelm Canaries, came to see him. Canaries said that an unconditional surrender as it was asked for by America and England was unacceptable for the German generals. But if the American president would indicate that he would accept an honorable surrender of the German army, this could be arranged. The German army would then be posted at the Eastern Front to fight there against the approaching Red Army. Soon after this meeting, Earle had an even longer one with the German ambassador Fritz von Papen, who made the same offer. At first Earle was not sure he had heard right, then he realized these men were serious, so he sent a message to Roosevelt. Nothing happened. He sent another one. Again nothing. When Canaries returned a few days later to hear Roosevelt's response, Earle couldn't give him one. Earle then sent a most urgent message to Washington, but again there was no answer. Neither Earle nor Canaries could know that a capitulation of Germany was not wanted. Roosevelt forbade Colonel Earle in a personal letter of March 24, 1945, to say anything about this event. Once the German army was driven from Rome, the army led by General Mark Clark was kept back, although it could easily have gone on to enter Yugoslavia, Vienna, Budapest and Prague. Instead, some of his soldiers were sent to the Normandy, which cost the lives of about 100,000 people and had drastic effects on the future shape of Eastern Europe. Why? At the Allies' conference in Quebec in 1943, an agreement was reached, urged by General George C. Marshall, that was named Russia's position. There it was said that Russia's position after the war will be a dominating one. The men who were outwardly in charge of the U.S. Roosevelt, Marshall and Eisenhower, had strict orders from their superiors, as you will also see in the next example, to conduct 113. The war in such a way as would best further the interests of the Illuminati according to the protocols of the Elders of Zion. Therefore, the Russian army was given ample time to spread out. Chapter 37: The American support for the Soviets during the war. An important factor to help in understanding the events of war is a remarkable book that is avoided at all cost by all the big media, film producers and most libraries, from Major Jordan's diaries. Major Ray C. Jordan was a veteran of the First World War and because of his military experience got the post of a lend-lease agent and liaison officer to the Russians. The first 2 years he served in Newark, Montana, and from May 10, 1942 in the United Nations Depot No. 8, Lend-Lease Division, Newark Airport, Newark, New Jersey, International Section, Air Service Command, Air Corps, U.S. Army. As liaison officer between the U.S. and the Russians, Jordan was surprised about the influence the Russian Colonel Anatoly Kotikoff had over Roosevelt's aide Harry Hopkins. Every time the Russians needed anything, Even special equipment, a call to Hopkins by Kotikoff, was all that was needed for a speedy delivery. Later Jordan noticed the black cases that accompanied almost all deliveries and he became curious. How he later succeeded in opening some of the cases is an adventurous story. He found papers about nuclear fusion, a list of the material on its way to the Soviet Union, 2 pounds of uranium-92 and deuterium. At this time he didn't know what it all meant. He wrote a diary with detailed descriptions of this and further events. In Siberia, a money plane had crashed which had carried printed plates, paper and other materials, so the Russians could print the same occupation money for Germany as the Americans. Because of the Lend-Lease Treaty, Stalin received from the US 20,000 aircraft, almost 40,000 trucks, twice as many tanks as they had when war started, railway engines, cars, food as well as secret material. Why had the US helped the Russians to that extent during the Second World War? And these were just a few examples. The Illuminati created the Red Regime. They knew what they wanted. Soviet Russia was an obvious tool in their plan, protocols, to enslave the whole world under a new world order. Chapter 38. The protocols have to be fulfilled, and Japan was denies its surrender just as Germany had been. The Japanese capitulated unconditionally in March 1945. In that month the Japanese Supreme Command sent a note to the American Embassy in Moscow, the Russian Embassy in Tokyo and the Pentagon in Washington saying that the Japanese imperial government would like an unconditional surrender. The Americans ignored it. Why? Later they claimed that they were not able to decipher it. But how then did they decipher the diplomatic and military codes before? We know the answer. The Japanese island had not yet been destroyed. The big show was still to come. The B-29s carried out the big city redevelopment in Japan for the international bankers. First the destruction of Tokyo, then the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It is said that many of the upper echelon in the Japanese army were members of a mystical secret society called Black Dragon, but I know nothing more about it. The post-war rebuilding of Germany and Japan brought astronomical profits for the international bankers. Both the Germans and the Japanese had the most industrious, 114, workers and managers. Yet their governments are also chosen and guided like puppets by the Illuminati. Later, when you see the members list of the different organizations, this will become very clear. Many of the German politicians in government are just as much part of this game as are the Americans or the Russians. Chapter 39. What was achieved by the Second World War? In human terms, the war was an absolute, unmitigated disaster. For the Illuminati it was a resounding success. The Second World War, with the estimated 30 million dead soldiers and says 100 million, is clearly part of the worldwide reconstruction program of the Illuminati. The objective being the installation of Weihshaupt's Novus Ordo Seculorum, the New World Order. For the Illuminati, Lenin was the perfect man in Russia. In the political and psychological course of events, communism had the role of the foil, that is, the conspirators used communism as the bogeyman to force Western nations into agreements and commitments that ran against their proper interests. At the beginning of the 20s, Lenin told the world of the future plans of the Illuminati. First we will take Eastern Europe, then the masses of Asia. This objective was reached as a result of World War II. The larger part of Asia followed a few years later. The Vietnam debacle was part of the cleanup drive where loose ends were tied. The Second World War brought the Illuminati even more. The large cracks in the old world order opened wide and the financial and social foundations of traditional morals were swept away. America, whose security was never endangered before or during the war, was forced by the maelstrom of world politics to give up its own politics. The Second World War cost America $400 billion and had the national debt rise to $220 billion. Because of this, the US was fully in the hands of the international bankers. That war paved the way for the foundation of the UN in 1945, whose headquarters are on land in New York, donated by Rockefeller. At least 47 of the founding members of the UN were also in the CFR. The UN is the largest Masonic lodge in the world, as is shown by its emblem. Like the Great Seal shown on the $1 bill, it is a Masonic symbol. Like the Statue of Liberty was given to the American Masons by the French Masonic Order of the Grand Orient. What became of the Nazi secret service, the Gestapo? William Bramley writes that the CIA had accepted the offer by Reinhard Jahn, the head of German secret operations in Russia, to help build an intelligence network in Europe. Many former SS members were then part of Jahn's organization. It became an important arm of the CIA in Western Europe and also formed the basis for the secret service of the Federal Republic of Germany. From the documents of the Nuremberg trials, the CIA got information about the psychiatric methods of the Nazis, which decades later were to be used in the infamous experiments about consciousness control. Interpol, a private international police organization for the fight against criminals and drug traffickers operating worldwide, was headed several times up to 1972 by former SS officers. This is not half as astonishing if one knows that during the Second World War Interpol was controlled by the Nazis. Chapter 40 Germany did not simply lose the war. 115. To finish on Germany and World War II, I will tell you something you definitely never read in any other book, something which will surely make you wonder about what you are told in your school books and will question your present picture of the world. As you know from history books, the German Reich never signed a peace treaty, because a peace treaty has to be signed by the leaders of the nation. But Hitler probably went to South America and anybody else was dead or gone as well. So Dönitz, substituting for Hitler, signed a ceasefire treaty for the arms of the Wehrmacht. And this ceasefire was broken by the Allies in their attack, led by Admiral Byrd in 1946, on Nordschwabenland, the German territory in Antarctica. They tried to get at the elite of them all who sure were smart enough to have a back door open, Nordschwabenland. And since the German elite, the Schwarz Sun, Black Sun and the Viril Gesellschaft was at that time and still today living in this particular area, at least some of them do, the Allied troops had been destroyed within weeks. And because of the broken ceasefire, the German Reich was again, and still is to this day any other book, something which will surely make you wonder about what you are told in your school books and will question your present picture of the world. As you know from history books, the German Reich never signed a peace treaty, because a peace treaty has to be signed by the leaders of the nation. But Hitler probably went to South America and anybody else was dead or gone as well. So Dönitz, substituting for Hitler, signed a ceasefire treaty for the arms of the Wehrmacht. And this ceasefire was broken by the Allies in their attack, led by Admiral Byrd in 1946, on Nordschwabenland, the German territory in Antarctica. They tried to get at the elite of them all who sure were smart enough to have a back door open, Nordschwabenland. And since the German elite, the Schwarz Sun, Black Sun and the Viril Gesellschaft was at that time and still today living in this particular area, at least some of them do, the Allied troops had been destroyed within weeks. And because of the broken ceasefire, the German Reich was again, and still is to this day, at war with the Allies. You may wonder, but this is an irrefutable and definite fact of which every important, high-ranking German that I have met knows. If the Allies would have won in Nordschwabenland against the Schwarz Sun, they would have come out with it on every front page in the world. But because of their defeat they kept it very secret. The same with their attack on Nordschwabenland in 1958, when the Americans blew up two nuclear heads, one below the ice and one above, to get access to the subterranean German base. But of course they failed, because the technology the Schwarz Sun has down the rise, as Admiral Byrd already said, highly advanced. And so the Anglo-American establishment with their Khazar illuminated bankers' background have been smart in keeping the whole affair top secret. The Allies were very successful in their newspapers and nowadays with their Hollywood background to make the Japanese and the Germans look the bad guys, but in fact it is rather the opposite that is true. Remember the attack on Pearl Harbor, which has been staged by the Americans themselves. Please check this information for yourself, making sure that what you will find out is based on your own research, and that it is the truth. To this day, Germany does neither have a peace treaty nor a ceasefire nor anything else. Germany has an illegal state installed by the Allies, the Federal Republic of Germany. If what I'm saying is true, there has to be some evidence that the Illuminati would have some of their puppets sitting at the top of the German Federal Republic, like in the other nations, too. Well, one of them was Chancellor Willy Brandt, a Jew, whose real name was Herbert Ernst Karl Frahm, offspring of the famous Israelite family Frahm from Lübeck, Germany.